Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two fantastic sponsors this week. Environments for Humans, our longtime sponsor, who are promoting their online conference this summer, the CSS Summit at cssummit.com. Use coupon code SHOPTALK for 20% off. And for the first time, DevTees. So the URL has like .es at the end of it, right? So DevTees.es. And it's like a new shirt store that sells shirts for programmers and just front-end folk like us. You'll love them, so go check out DevTees. We'll tell you about both of those a little more later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Front end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert. Howlin' Dave Rupert.
My name is Chris Goyer.
You have to practice that voice. It's making you hurt. Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Chris Carr. With us this week, we have Noah Stokes. Thanks for joining us, Noah.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yay. NoahStokes.com. You all know him as Mother Futon. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. I'm actually kind of envious of Dave's voice right there. I couldn't tell if that was pre-recorded or not. If it wasn't, I'm very impressed.
It'd be good if we had like some guy we brought in, a celebrity, like, yay!
Holy Matt Rupert!
Rupert!
Noah. So, Noah, you work at Bold. Hello, Bold.
Yes.
.com. What do you do there? What's your job title?
Oh man, you know what? At the small shops, you're just kind of a jack of all trades. So I do a lot of business development on the business side, and on the work side, I find myself doing quite a bit of front end dev and some design. I prefer the front end dev to the design. If I had a choice, I would do that all day. But it's really one of those things where you just need to step in wherever you can.
How big is it? Are you Bold, or it's more than you, right?
Yeah, we're a small team, 4 guys.
Yeah.
Cool. But you guys work on some pretty good stuff. Like what was the pets? Your PetsMD? No, it's not Pets. PetsMD. That's like where you get your dog fixed.
There a PetsMD?
I don't know. It's just in my head.
Yeah, we worked with the team out in Tennessee for PetSafe and Sport Dog. They're
PetSafe.
Do you guys have pets? They make anything for pets.
Yeah.
Things that you didn't know pets had and needed, they make it.
Really?
And it's incredible, and they do a ton of volume on their Magento store. So we worked with them. We were just one of the vendors. There was, you know, that, remember those Tennessee, Visit Tennessee, or Summer Tennessee,
yes.
Winter Tennessee, those great shops, Design okay. Sensory. They helped and did a lot of the design work, and we kind of stepped in and helped with the responsive front end, and then getting it into, it runs on the expression engine, CMS. Expression engine, CMS. What a challenge, because it wasn't a flat design, and there's a drop shadow on almost everything. So it was really just kind of a new set of rules that we were playing with. It was fun. It was great site. Privileged to have worked on it. They're all great people over there. Everybody in Tennessee is nice. Everybody not in California is nice. You ever notice that?
Oh, man. I thought you were a California lover. Or do you like not nice?
I like California. That's why I'm in California. But there's people outside of California that are way nicer than people in California. We're a little self-centered here.
I feel like every segment of the country though has like some claim to fame for niceness, you know, like Southern hospitality and Midwest nice, and you know, I'm sure Maine has something.
You know where it's nice? This is Bakersfield.
That's safe. Oh, sure. It's just
dust. Everybody's nice in Bakersfield.
You have to be, otherwise they might die.
That's why they're going to name the next Mac OS X release after that.
Absolutely.
Sometimes when you're looking for RWD sites and you're like, what's one that's like kind of complicated? Now we can go check out PetSafe because it's totally responsive and totally complicated. It's grids. Anyway.
Sweet.
It's not a designer's blog, you know what I'm saying?
Great job.
Yeah.
Great job.
Thanks.
So that's the majority of your online life these days is Bald and its clients. Yeah.
Client work.
Cool.
And you've recently started a office hours, right? HelloBold/office-hours. What's this about?
So, you know, when I first got started, kind of first went out on my own, I talked a lot with Greg Story, who at the time maybe was still Airbag, or maybe he had just merged with Happy Cog, but he kind of gave me a lot of really great insights just on running a small studio. And, you know, some of my favorite things to hear about when I go to conferences or just kind of real world stories of how other people maybe in a similar position have had success or made failures in certain areas and how they learn from them. And so I thought, man, it'd be great to start a little podcast. It's something short, 10, 15 minutes, where we just talk shop about shop talk. We talk shop about studios and you know, how we operate. It's not really something that people blog about too often or talk about. So the hope is that maybe we get a little dialogue going there and just share some of, especially some of the areas that we screwed up in, and maybe answer questions for people that are thinking about going out on their own or starting their own small studio. So that's the plan with office hours. We got to get it recorded, pretty soon, and, really looking forward to, we've had some great questions come in already. So I was really surprised by that and am stoked. See what I did there? To get that going.
Ew. Ew. Never get that.
Yeah. So sure. Yeah, I like this idea of sharing things that are unobvious perhaps or that people are curious about for running a business. Like, do you have some kind of example of? I don't know. Would it be like here's like where like communication broke down with a client and that was a bummer, and if we could go back in time we would have done it this way, or here's a way we got screwed.
You know, one question that came in was just like, okay, what was it like doing your first hire, and how did that process go? And you know, so now that we're distributed, none of us are in the same place anymore. We all used to be up in the Bay Area, and we since moved. That's not, how do you guys manage your particular team? You know, everybody's got a different way of how they do handle remote. You know, what works for you, what doesn't, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Cool. Looking forward to it. And, of course, there's the Mother Futon news, but no spoilers. stay
Man.
Tuned, right?
Stay tuned. Should be a new episode today, perhaps.
Really?
Green screen. Yeah, and, you know, man, that was – I share office space with a buddy. He goes way back, best man at my wedding, who's a videographer. So he's got this green screen. He's got these lights. He's got this light that's called the Diva Light. You know who else uses the Diva Light? Obama uses the Diva Light. I'll send you a photo of Obama and the Diva Light. And so he's got the setup. So we just recorded this one day and threw it on the 404 page of the new site. And it was, I was kind of hesitant, but I got some good feedback. So we recorded another episode, last Friday, and we'll get it edited, finish editing it today and see if it's just kind of a fun release for a while. See if people enjoy it.
Sweet. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's, get into some Shop Talk Show stuff. Of course, we got to kick it off with Some drama. Top Hot Drama. I mean, this is kind of even bigger than making websites. This isn't exactly like petty internet hot drama, but the whole Prism and every tech company ever is like giving our data to the government. That's pretty exciting. I don't know if you guys want to comment on that. Noah, do you have a comment? Barack Obama's listening to this podcast under his right.
I don't know. Part of me is not surprised, and then the other part of me is, I don't know. I don't know. I'm curious to see how it all shakes out. We'll see.
I know.
What you're curious about is if you can walk into a room somewhere and type in Dave Rupert and just see like this, like, you know, futuristic UI fly by with like, you know, pictures of his family and past transgressions. You know, like, yeah. You kind of doubt that, right? Or like, you know, in like recent emails of interest, you kind of doubt it's that nice, right? I was listening to, you know, on the Twit network, there's that Security Now show with Steve Gibson. I've listened to it forever. They're on like episode a zillion on that thing. It's like this hour long or longer show about security, and Steve like claimed to figure it out. So it was pretty interesting. He thinks the reason they call it Prism was because, and all these, you know, there's Google and Yahoo and all these big companies that explicitly said, no, for sure, we do not allow the government to have access to our servers. And he thinks they're telling the truth. But the way that the internet works is that there's all these routers all over the world, right? And when you request something from another country or something, it's not just a direct request from your, you know, routers near you to routers where that is. It bounces in between tons of different servers. So if you were to get access to a router that's like really close to some of Google's main servers, that most of the traffic at that router is Google traffic, just because that's how routers work. And that if that, you know, if whatever three letter organization had access to the huge routers that are really close to Google, and then they just split it like a prism, you know, just kind of grab their little splice of the traffic, that's what they're doing. So they don't have direct access to Google servers, but they can, you know, kind of sniff every single packet that goes through routers that are near Google. Anyway.
That's scary.
That's wild. So it's like, it's stealing your neighbor's Wi-Fi in a way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but all the Wi-Fi.
That's wild. Oh, boy. What a terrible society we live in. Oh, this is very interesting.
So, you know, if you use HTTPS, your packets are encrypted. And there's, you know, I guess there's ways to be safer about it. But
yeah.
Or just give up.
Give up. Give up. Just assume everything's being.
Anyway, that's far, pretty far away from making websites. But in the closer, in the vein, Dave's voice lent your beautiful blogging voice to the world of responsive images lately. And you followed up on your List Apart article in your images.
Yes.
What was that all about?
I wrote a post called Ugh Images because it's ridiculous. It's a joke. Still, that responsive images is still difficult, you know. It's incredibly like complex, and there's no movement on any sort of solution or whatever. And so I just kind of documented like thoughts and random things I'm thinking about images. What's neat, or I don't know if it's neat, but I did see the other day that Google or Steve Souders and another guy, Igor or something, joined the responsive images community group. So I like to think it's because of my blog post and it was so threatening, but no, it was, clearly like, I'm glad they're in the conversation because hopefully something can happen. So,
did Obama retweet your post?
He did not. He's been pretty quiet about it lately. It's interesting because, like, if you look at screen sizes, this was something that came up at screensizes.es or whatever with the .es. It's like all the devices they list, and granted, it's probably really Westernly skewed, you know, pretty American or whatever, but like they're all the phones are like 1.5x or more. So it's sort of like, should we just be giving phones giant images. That's really counterintuitive to what I assume, you know, or even probably somebody in Africa, like the worst case scenario, would want. It's not a bad thing if you're in Africa. I should clarify that. But it's just like, that's our like stereotypical low bandwidth situation, but and pay for bandwidth situation. But it just seems like maybe giving like a slightly large image is the best way to go in for phones. I don't know. Tablet now? I don't know, guys. I'm just riffing.
Maybe we geo serve images based on your IP.
That's good. We should add another level of complexity.
That's like IP profiling. Oh, you're in Africa, we're giving you the crappy images.
That's terrible.
And you're in Japan, we'll give you the high res. That would be something.
Hmm.
I wish it was more automatic than it was. I mean, just looking at, just because I have this tab open at hellobold.com/office hours, that like big one with you and the office hours in yellow and stuff is a fairly large image, right? But, and it looks great on the desktop. Yeah. It's not like, why wouldn't it be just kind of great if the smaller version of that, you had to do no work at all, but on a mobile device, it just was a smaller image. It just was as big as it needed to be.
Well, yeah, that's, our site is super heavy, and it was one of these things I was back and forth with, and I'm like, it's a portfolio site. These images are huge, you know, and I'm crunching them, but it's portfolio, so you still want it to look nice, and it was, you know, I just went with, well, it's going to be a heavy site. I guess it'll just be heavy, and that's the unfortunate case for us, you know, because there wasn't that good of a solution out there, like Dave was saying. But, you know, if, I don't know. I hope they come up with something quick. But knowing the way that everybody works, or it seems to work, and the decision makers, will probably have three different solutions. We'll have HD images and then Blu-ray images, and Microsoft will support one, and somebody will support the other, and we'll have to support all of them.
At least it'd be something.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Which is better than the absolutely nothing that we have now. Yeah.
This is true.
So, Dave, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have to go turn off your... I know your Roomba live, sometimes is a problem.
The live broadcast went crazy and it booted everyone. I apologize. Technical difficulties. Sorry, dudes. Yeah.
Other on the drama, and we talked about this probably enough, is all this flat design stuff. But Noah's written about it before, right? And then
you're the key figurehead of flat design haters, Noah.
Just own it and lead it.
Oh my goodness!
So iOS 7 comes out of the gate with a really strong showing. How did you feel about it?
The opening segment of the Mother Futon news that's coming out sums it up perfectly. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
But good. I'm not a fan.
Oh man. It's
what do you guys think of it? I mean,
it feels
preserving judgment till it's in my hand, I guess. But some of it does look pretty questionable.
There's a lot of it, like I hear it's all about the interactions, like that's what's important about it, and because clearly it's not the visual design, but it just feels really rushed. I don't know. That's where I'm at. And then I don't know. I've been reading like Gruber and stuff, and all those like Mac guys.
He's been looking up a lot of good stuff about it.
He has, but he's being like super apologetic and stuff like that. There's an article like no one uses their Nexus 7s anymore because it's a piece of junk.
Yeah.
But my iPad just so happens is so that good.
I have Nexus 7 on my desk, which is random. I normally don't have these things, and I really, really hate my Nexus 7. I had to take it apart with a knife the other day and reattach the battery thingy this is a little bit of a tangent, I guess. But yeah, it just like internally came disattached and wouldn't start up. Thankfully, there's a YouTube video about it. Thanks, YouTube.
You had to take apart your Nexus.
There's been some good articles. I like the one about the lock screen, where it's like the slide to unlock is, there's literally an arrow that points up, but that's not the direction that you slide to unlock.
Right.
The
other interesting.
I have a couple of thoughts on it. I've heard the same, Dave, that the interactions are really slick. But I've also heard like this, what did they talk about? This low power Bluetooth thing on it. And it just started making me think, I wonder if this is more of a, just kind of a blank canvas, because there's going to be another device, say a watch or something, that's going to communicate. And this interface needs to be more genericized because of other peripherals that may be communicating back and forth. And maybe, I don't know. I have suspicions about that. I've talked to a few iOS devs who were there who were like, this Bluetooth stuff, Apple's doing something with this. They didn't make a big huff out of it, but they're like, something's going on here. So maybe that watch stuff wasn't you know, out of left field there.
Well, that's yeah, okay. I'll buy, just for the sake of like excitement, I'll buy into the fact that they're paving the way for something else, but I don't know. Here's the other thing. For OS X, right? I went through and like looked at all the things they're offering. It's like ebooks on my desktop, like it's stuff I don't want. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm confused.
Tabs in the Finder. Come on now.
Tabs in Finder.
Yeah, that's
can I
awesome.
Get an amen?
Amen. But it's
amen.
Like, but it's like 40 years late.
I know.
I use Total Finder for that, which I think is a very good app. So if you need them today, use Total Finder. But it's a little. It's just heavy, and it doesn't update as smoothly. You know. Like a Total Finder update takes like 8 steps or something. It's a little much, but it has like key commands for showing hidden files, which comes in useful once in a while. You know, when there's like a freaking HTXS file on your desktop, they're like, where is that?
Awesome. Well, shall we just jump
yeah,
into
we have so a bunch of good questions for Noah. So let's just do them. They're just mixed in here. So
okay,
we'll
cool.
just we'll get to them as we get there. We have one from Roy Huck who asked that. This is just an interesting front end like trick question kind of. How would you normally work with displaying fractions on a site? I have found many ways to format fractions, but most involve markup tags or addition of classes or whatever. The default number/number format is my normal method, but the client would prefer a different look. These fractions will be entered by the client into a WYSIWYG and then included within the description of text, so no additional markup can be used. Love the show. Appreciate the help. I thought this was kind of an interesting thing that we could try to pick apart.
Well, so Unicode has some fractions, right?
Right.
Like it has, I think it's
at least has 1/2. Sure.
Yeah, 1/2, 1/3, 2/3, and then it has, I think, 4ths and 8ths. So it goes all the way to 8ths. But if you're doing like 49/322, you're hosed. So I don't know.
So, but you mean this is the clients are entering it anyway. So this is, would this be a case for a Rupert style tiny jQuery? You're going to have to regex for these things, right?
I absolutely would make a tiny jQuery. Do a
or
regex.
Maybe Markdown does it. Maybe Markdown does it. I'm not even sure. You would think that's the kind of thing that it does, you know?
Yeah. I would do jQuery. I don't know. Noah, do you do fractions?
I would make an image of every possible fraction combination.
Sweet.
And then insert an image there. Yeah.
Image replace. What's weird? It needs custom styling.
But
right?
You got to make a Retina style.
You got to have a Retina image. It's got to be responsive.
Make your own icon font with every possible fraction.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. With no extra markup. Do you think you could, if it's a WYSIWYG, do you think you could add a custom class that you say if you put a fraction in here, you know, highlight it and select this custom class from the WYSIWYG, and then that will wrap it in something that maybe then, you know, the code that Dave's going to write for you could be applied to that fraction.
Yeah, totally.
You could do an SVG, right? That just takes like 2 parameters or something. I don't know if that's possible. You could also like write a, like, I think in your WYSIWYG, it has to be like 3/4 and then you regex for 2 numbers with a slash in between them. And then you auto replace that with whatever your cool styling. Like it's going to be like span first number or whatever, dividend slash divisor or whatever. So
yeah,
what about I got a solution. You ready?
You got one?
Well, let's do Noah's first.
Oh, I was just going to say, Brian Franco here in the chat room says, he says icon font. Is there like a fractions font that you could just select?
Well,
that's
what I was going to say. You know, symbol set is an icon font in which it, like, if you type the word heart, it turns into a heart. It uses some kind of fancy new CSS. So it's all semantic. Like, why can't, like, you know, the word heart could be any string, right? So why not 1/2? And it just knows, it's just part of the font that turns that word into a. That's the way to go. I wonder if they even dabble in that. They might, because I know they're like a, it's like a team that's like making money now. So I wonder if they get into that. But that would be the way to do it. Somebody should get on that. Make a font that works how a symbol set works.
Yeah,
it turns 1/2 into a single thing.
There's like a bunch. Somebody linked it. Atasi in the chat room linked mathjax.org. There are like math, like languages, like like LaTeX or MathML. You know.
Oh yeah.
Which sound I call it. MathML sounds. Oh, like a lot of fun. XML meets math. But there's an option there. I mean,
cool.
Who knows?
All right, that was good. We covered some good options there. Good luck, Roy. We have a audio question here from Andy McCormick. And Ryan Boone asked the same question. So duplicate question. This one's for Noah.
Okay, here we go. Pulling it up. And yep.
Noah, as I go through your portfolio of work over at HelloBull.com, I see Expression Engine mentioned a lot. For some of the sites, I just see the technologies used or a framework, but over and over, I seem to see Expression Engine used. What is it about Expression Engine that you like so much over other CMS choices out there? For the other sites that don't have Expression Engine listed, are you creating custom CMSs, or what are you doing with those as well? Thanks a lot.
So, Noah, you're an Expression Engine guy, you'd say, maybe?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
Okay. So what I like about Expression Engine, I feel like it's more of a, if I could call it a true content management system compared to something like WordPress, which is, I felt like started as a blogging platform and moved over to, with pods and stuff like that, moved over to more of a CMS. There's a certain way that I think about Expression Engine where Expression Engine to me is just an interface for a database, because I feel like you could grab data anywhere and put it anywhere else with ease, and it's easy for my customers, my clients to do that. The whole point of building a site for them is so that they can update it easily. If they can't update it easily, the site's dead in the water, and Expression Engine for us has been the easiest tool for that. Very extensible. We built custom hooks into it. But there's something about it where you create an Expression Engine is called channels, which is just, you could think of it like a database table where you're just, you know, in this channel, I'm dumping in all the speakers that have ever been on Shop Talk Show. And then in another channel, you could just pool, you know, this channel could be episodes, and you could literally drag and drop. Okay, well, Noah is on this episode, and you drag him over there. And that's so easy for our users to do, our clients. And then it also follows a rule that I heard a long time ago that you only keep data in the database in one place. So you don't have Noah's information in one table, then Noah's information in another, because you have to update it in multiple places. And so Expression Engine has always been really easy for us to use it. We don't set it up in kind of the traditional way. I'm a stickler when it comes to URLs. So I kind of have this certain way of thinking about it, and it's hard to explain without showing it. What I'd like to do actually one day is kind of A/B a site with something like WordPress and then Expression Engine, the exact same site, and build them out in each CMS to show kind of the differences. I thought kind of a CMS hack off,
super duper good idea.
It just seemed like I know Jonathan Christopher's listening, and he's a huge WordPress guy. And so he and I have talked about these things because For us, it's just worked great, and it's worked great, especially for our clients, which is the most important part. Sites that we don't put into a CMS, either the client didn't want that. For example, the Hello Bold site that we just launched is just flat files. There's no CMS behind it. I figured the images were heavy enough. I'd stop at database queries. So it's just flat files. But sometimes we don't. You know, they either have an existing one, or we didn't get hired to put They didn't want us to put it in a CMS. That's pretty rare, but. You know, a ton of our work is Expression Engine, and it's been, Dave, didn't you guys do one for, Mark Simonson.
Yeah. The
farm Simonson. Yes.
Made Proxima Nova. Sorry, yeah. We put, put them on, we got help actually from Vector Media. They're like a EE shop out in New York City,
yeah.
But they did really good work, and he gave us like a tour, you know, and was like, this is what I'm going to show the client, blah, blah, blah. And like, it was cool. And just what he had built was awesome. And then we were like, oh, could this do this? You know? And I'm in my head, I'm like, that's like a day of work in WordPress. And he's like, yeah, easy. And I was just like, yeah, that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah. To be fair, I've never installed WordPress in my life. I've never used it before.
Hmm. Well,
so I'm not like a complete. My business partner Garrett, the truth, he loves comes WordPress. Out here. Yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't used WordPress.
It's one of those hard things that so few people have really extensive experience in multiple CMSs that a lot of times these conversations just take the angle of this is the one I'm comfortable with, so this is the one I use. It's the same thing with like hosting companies and stuff. Like, I love Bluehost or whatever. You're like, well, it's just because you have a site on there and it just never happened to go down for you or whatever. I'm sure you would love whatever host you were on.
So Expression Engine costs $300. Noah, are you rich? You drive a Ferrari. I know that.
Yeah, drive the Ferrari. We pass that cost along to the customer. They buy the license so that they can own it and manage it and have that. But that's a one-time cost. There's a couple of add-ons that I think are invaluable that are going to put you up to around $500 total.
Oh my
gosh. You're Dave, they're paying us a whole lot more than $500 to build the site. It's a small cost in comparison.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a little bit of drama, not drama, but like Craft CMS. Are you familiar with this? Like that's kind of like a spinoff of EE or. The EE guys I know are like, hey, what about this Craft thing?
Right. So Craft was built by Brandon Kelly at Pixel and Tonic. And Brandon is one of the foremost add-on developers for Expression Engine. The two add-ons that I talked about are both made by Brandon that I would put into just about every EE site that I did. And so Brandon built his own version of a CMS. There's some really great things about it. I was in on it early testing it. It's got localization built in, which is a real challenge in Expression Engine. We've done a couple of sites that are multi-language, and it's possible, but it's just tedious, and he's got it built right into the core. Mm-hmm. And he's got it uses a new templating language called Twig, which is a bit more powerful than what you get standard with Expression Engine. We've yet to do a Craft site. But we definitely will be trying it out. There's so many out there. It kind of brought a little drama because Brandon is the foremost add-on developer for EE. And so now the guy's making essentially a competitor because his market, his clients are Expression Engine users. Hmm. And now he's offering an alternative. So that's a little bit of the drama there. But from what I've seen with Brandon, he's got a small team. They're smart and they're fast. They've got, it's definitely worth checking out if you guys are interested. He's taken all of kind of a lot of the pain points he's seen. If you've used Expression Engine and have had issues with it, he's tried to work all those out and build something that he thinks is better. And so far what I've seen, it looks pretty good.
Because that was kind of a deal with the Expression Engine. There was a bit of a bottleneck or something with the company that makes Expression Engine, and they also do Code Igniter, which is pretty rad too. But weren't they? There was some sort of like things.
There's a little bit of stagnation
fast,
there,
right?
Yeah, there's a little bit of stagnation. Code Igniter hadn't been updated in a long time. We used to do a lot of development in it, and we moved away from it, and we do Laravel now as our primary framework.
That's good to hear, actually. Because I didn't know if Code Igniter was still cruising, but that's good to know.
As far as I know, it's still active, and the whole team at Ellis Lab, the shop behind Expression Engine, underwent some changes recently, and my understanding is that they have some great new things coming out, and they're pushing development forward. But it was stagnant for a little while there, all around with Expression Engine itself and with Code Igniter, and so people started to just, you know, in like the Rails world, you're just getting completely lapped, you know, 3, 4, 5 times mm-hmm. by the technology that they're pushing out in their frameworks. And Code Igniter is still supporting like PHP 4. And so it's limited on what it could do. So there's, Tyler Otwell, I think it's Otwell, did Laravel. And that's like those Rails moments for PHP guys where, oops, I have a blog, right? Remember that mm-hmm. video? That's like Laravel has just been incredible, incredible.
Cool.
It's like Rails for PHP people when it comes to that community around it, and people are just building libraries and giving them out, and there's a central, like a gym, repository where you could just, oh, is there an OAuth 2? Oh, there is. Psh, installed, done, you know, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Really cool stuff. So if,
that's pretty vital for a community like that. Read NetTuts, man, every other post is about Laravel. So I'm sure that
really?
Has something to do with its popularity.
That's cool. I was unaware of the like gem repository. That's really cool because, I mean, how many like bookmarks to WordPress plugins or whatever, or like CakePHP plugins or something do I have just littered throughout my computer? So pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely check
it
out.
I should do our sponsor. We got a final thought there.
I just say check it out if you're doing PHP development. It's cool.
Yeah, I would like to, except for that every, you know, I just work in Rails now for the big project board.
Rails! Sponsor!
Bye.
Yeah, so we have a brand new sponsor, DevTees, and I said at the beginning of the show, it's www.devte.es, so with the EO, one of them clever names. And it's by Joel Glovier, and I hesitate to say Glovier just because my name ends in I-E-R, too, and it's not Coyer, it's Coyer.
I think
so. Maybe it's Glovier, maybe? Glovier? Or sorry, Joel.
Joel works at... He's in the chat room right now. He can do it. He can settle this score.
Please do.
It go glove plus what? Anyway, Glover with an I. All right, go ahead.
Congratulations on working at GitHub now. That's pretty cool. So I think that he was traveling and some stuff for that, and we had to kind of shuffle around the sponsorship, but I'm glad it's out now. There's some pretty cool shirts here. I like the Learn the Shell one with like these old school dudes, and he's like holding up his laptop and showing his friends with this like old school type on it. It's like Learn the Shell. Impress your friends. It's pretty cool. Anyway, I did a Kickstarter for these and did really well. So now it's an officially open shop. And you know what? That's what Kickstarter is for. It's not. It's oftentimes to help you achieve something like getting an online store up and running, as it was for me and my Kickstarter. It's, you know, it's less about the Kickstarter itself and about the, you know, achieving the dream of running an online store like more long term. So I hope that can happen for Joel. Good luck with all this. Everybody check out DevTees. It's pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet.
I like this Internet U one. That's like, that's my whole education is the internet, right? That was a great shirt.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, thanks, Joel.
Joel has a question too. Let's
Glovier. Shoot, he just said it. Glover. There it is. All right. He had a question. Oh, audio question. That's me. Sorry.
Yeah, this was fun.
We run a professional show here. Here we go.
Icon fonts versus inline SVG. Go.
Uh-oh. Here we go. Noah, icon fonts or inline SVG or none?
Icon fonts.
Yay.
Yeah.
No, so here's the deal. SVG, you could have multiple colors. So first of all, you have to look at your requirements. You know, if you have a little circle rainbow thing, Icon Font can't do that because it's one color only.
Yeah.
So there you go. And inline SVG, an icon font can be cached too because it's a separate web request. So the second time that page loads, it doesn't need to load that file because it's already loaded again. You probably don't cache your documents as strongly as you do your resources. So inline SVG increases the size of that document. So when you reload it, it probably reloads all of that stuff. So, you know, you're increasing the weight of your document there, too. But, you know, then it's less web requests, too. So there's just a million little trade-offs. It's so hard to make decisions like that without, like, the specific context.
The support for inline – or, sorry, icon fonts is just a little bit better. Like, you get IE8 and above. You actually get IE7, but you can't do before and after an IE7 and stuff. But so you get – you get a little more support, and that's why I use icon fonts whenever possible. But if you're like i9 plus or whatever, and you never have to look at an Android phone, that's pretty cool. I would inline SVG. But then when you inline SVG, some dude on an Android phone is going to say, I can't see the icons. True story. Happens every day.
Yeah, there's other cool things you can do with inline SVG. I mean, there's the fact that it can do media queries, and then they're relative to the size of the SVG itself, which is kind of neat, like a little localized media queries. You can have like hover areas of the SVG file be specific to that vector shape, which is you can't really do
anything. SVG is like a Flash competitor. So I think of it that way. Like, would you like, are your icons little Flash movies, or are they like just like a sprite sheet? And if they're a sprite sheet, then maybe icon fonts work. That's how I break it down in my brain.
I like that.
It's almost as good as Noah's. It's just an interface for a database. That's a nice way to put EE. Okay.
Thanks,
okay.
Joel Glover.
Sorry, Joel. This is not going well. Stephen Wolston asks, I have a question about design. I am beginning a green fields project. I'm not sure if that's a descriptor or if it's literally for a company client called Green Fields. And I have been researching layout approaches, and the golden ratio seems to be a common standard. I understand the whole proportion thing, but I'm concerned that making the site responsive may break this divine proportion. What are your thoughts or strategies you use? Have you ever like fired up a website, Noah, and been like, I'm going to make this thing based on the golden ratio?
No, never done the golden ratio. If grids are based on the golden ratio, then I've done the golden ratio, but I've never intentionally used the golden ratio.
I think it's the seashell kind of thing, right? Where it's kind of like
conch shell.
It's almost like
he's got the conch.
Have you ever put a golden ratio, like that symbol of the spiral, over a website to try and convince the client?
Overlaid it?
Yeah.
After I presented the design?
Here's the design.
Here's the golden ratio. And then after that, on top of that, I just put images of piles of cash too.
That's good.
Here's your design. Here's the golden ratio. Here's all your money.
Cash mountain.
You're right, cash mountain.
I like that. It was like there was a Jason Santa Maria tweet the other couple weeks ago. It was like, just because your logo is based on circles doesn't mean it's a good design. He linked up this freaking logo that just was like a bunch of circle, and the logo was stupid, you know? Like, just because the Twitter bird has a bunch of circles in it doesn't mean that's automatically a good design. I think that's funny too. Like, just because you use golden ratio doesn't do anything to. It depends on how you use it. It's just like anything else. You know, maybe if you do it just right, the thing ends up being like 2% more pleasing to the human eye. But I definitely wouldn't base all of my design decisions based on this. you know.
The human eye also based on the golden ratio. I don't know. I'm just saying.
What was the other? What was the other part of his question about the about a site being responsive with the golden ratio, or how do you handle that?
I have been researching layout approaches, and the golden ratio seems to be a common standard. I understand the whole proportion thing. I don't know. Nothing really. Do you have some thoughts on responsive design in general?
No, I'm not going to talk about that in front of Dave.
I will crucify you.
Or he was concerned that making the site responsive would break it if you use
would
it.
Would break the golden ratio.
So, it's not going to. Like, you have, like, a percentage, right? Like, one is going to be, right. like, yeah, 61.8% or something, and the other one's going to be 37-point-something%.
But well, that's like, if it's only in widths, you know, but what if heights are involved?
Yeah,
too?
Your height, because text flows, right, Steve? So when you squeeze something, text gets longer. And what's weird is your text gets longer and your images get shorter. So you have this like disproportionate kind of thing going on. You maybe need to be a little bit more flexible than like golden ratio the whole world, you know? You need to kind of plan for like these kind of awkwardness things happening. So, and if you start mobile first and build up, you have less problems with that, you know, like things squeezing and aligning.
So you will break it at a certain point, and that's okay.
Yeah. Embrace
will
change.
I break the golden ratio on mobile? Yes.com. Yes.
Perfect. Well, cool.
I want to get the last sponsor out of the way, too, and then we'll just do all questions up till the end. Since we have two, sometimes we wait too late. I'm sorry, my beautiful sponsors. Environments for Humans has been our sponsor for just as long as I can remember on Chop Talk Show. Their big event of the summer, the 5th annual CSS Summit. So you go to cssummit.com, it'll redirect you to the Environments for Humans site where you can buy tickets to this thing and stuff. It's an online conference, meaning you can just watch it from anywhere you are that you have an internet connection, you know, desktop computer. It's July 23rd through 25th from 9 to 5. You know, you just watch it all day long, and it's just speaker all day long. Tons of good speakers there. Dave's doing it. Val from last week is doing it. Tim Brown, Rachel Andrew, Ben Frain, other guests that you'll tab back in. It's people that have been on the show before that you know about. Chris Epstein, Laura Kalbag. Tons of good people going to be at this thing. You want to hear them talk. It's going to be great. It's less expensive in general than other conferences just because it is online and it's an inexpensive in other ways too. You can just, you know, make a bologna sandwich or whatever. You don't have to be in a foreign city or whatever. So that's their big event of the summer, and it's just all about CSS. If you just want to geek out hard on CSS, check out cssummit.com. Use the coupon code SHOPTALK during checkout for 20% off. Let's do another question.
Here, we got one for Noah as well from Murphy Randall. Here we go. Audio question. Loading it in. Come on, Tubes.
Hi, Chris and Dave and Noah. This is Murphy Randall. I'm wondering how best you prepare for a conference, not as a speaker, but as a spectator. What do you plan? What do you take with you? And then once you're there, how do you make the best of your time and the best of your ticket and make sure you're getting the most out of the conference you can?
I love this question, Murphy. This is great. Noah, how as a conference, you speak at conferences from time to time, but as a spectator, what do you do? How do you plan?
Okay. So I had a thought and then he talked about what you bring and stuff, but I'm going to go with what I was saying. Just as far as conferences for me have been always about networking. 95% of the jobs that we do at Bold are all from referral network kind of things. So when I go, the plan is usually to, meet as many people as I can, from that aspect, socialize as best I can. I'm not like the most outgoing. But if there's people there, if there's either speakers or other attendees that I know, somebody that I want to meet up, there's a lot of times I'll go with an agenda of like, okay, Carl Smith from EngineWorks is going to be here. I'm going to go pick his brain about employees and how he handles remote employees. So sometimes, depending on who's there, I'll come with an agenda of like, I want to talk to that guy and pick his brain about this. Other times, I try not to be swayed by sometimes they'll have two branches or something, so you could go hear this talk or you go hear that talk at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'll try not to be swayed by popular opinion and really just go for, you know, what's going to be the best thing that I could apply to my business at this particular time. Or even is this talk applicable? Like, do I use SAS and Mixins? Not really. So I'm going to go to this other one over here and see what this is all about. Or if I want to get into those things, I try to be as business focused, I guess, as possible. Just try to gather as much information because, for me, that firsthand kind of stuff, people's experiences, like I had mentioned earlier, is really been invaluable just as far as learning for me.
Mm-hmm. I
like that. So,
I would say I do the same. Like, I try to find, like, I'm like, oh, so and so is going to be there. Dan Mall is going to be there. I'm going to buy him a Coke or something.
Celeb stalking.
Sort of. But I want to
have a plan, right?
I want to talk to this guy. The only other thing I would add is, like, when I'm listening to talks, and I don't always do a good job at this, but I try to like close my laptop and, you know, turn off my phone and like watch the talk rather than just like whatever do work through the whole conference.
At least give it a chance right away and get the vibe of it, get what's going on, and if it's relevant to you, then give it your all. You know, sometimes you can tell if a talk is just like, this is just isn't up my alley, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes talks like that are still valuable to see because, you know, it could be a talk about anything and it could be interesting. I mean, it could be a carpenter up there, and if they're a good presenter, it could, you know, they can present stuff that's useful to you. But I like that idea of having a, you know, a plan and knowing who else is going and be like, okay, well, I'm coming all this way. I'm going to at least do this. I'm at least going to meet this person. So I have some kind of plan other than no plan at all.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And even on the meeting people front, when this industry is like the nicest industry. So you can go up to your design or dev hero and introduce yourself, and I guarantee you they're going to like, oh, let's sit down and have a beer, right? So it's don't be afraid like to go up and talk to those people. Everybody's a sweetheart in this industry, at least everybody I've met. Dave, mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. Maybe, but everybody else, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I would agree. I am such a scumbag. It's just like talk to people. I think that's the big thing too, is like going out to lunch with people, like, you know, just do stuff with people, be outgoing. If we're probably all a little introverted, right? You know, we work on computers all day, but like this is your like 2 days to just really kind of be extroverted and just meet people, talk with people, get into really weird conversations about some, like, I don't know, some guy does some job that you'd never ever do, but ask him questions about it.
So, totally. You can even go up and be like, hey, remember that one time when you had that GitHub project? Yeah, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
The Chris Farley approach. I just
that will be fine.
I think just be outgoing. It helps if you socialize with alcohol, obviously, but if you don't, like, just go to the parties and have fun and talk to people. I think that's kind of the big thing too. So
I went to one recently, well, sort of pseudo recently, that W3 conf, and I was just like, I'm going to live blog the entire thing. I'm going to pay super close attention, take extensive notes, and then blog it like Luke W does. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it was over, I went home and went to bed. It was so it was so hard. Yeah. I really was literally exhausted at the end of it, but I've never paid that close of attention to talks before, and I can tell you I got a lot more out of it. So if your goal is to just like soak up knowledge, like taking extensive notes in such a way that like that you're prepared to share them with other people, not just for yourself, like, oh yeah, that was interesting, and you just jot it down or whatever, but like tell the story of that talk such that, you know, if somebody else wasn't there, that they get the highlights from it from your writing. Man, that can be intense. But, you know, that's good. It forces you to shut your laptop. And
you might get some link traffic even. I'm just saying.
If you are the source.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. People listen to that stuff. I'm saying. Anyhow. Well, all right. Well, great question.
Let's do one more, huh? Murphy. Can we? Do you have time for one more, Noah?
Yeah.
You have time? Okay. Here we go. This one's from Eliel Kiskinen. A question about code editors. I'm about to switch code editors from Dreamweaver Mega Package to something lighter and better. And I've heard you talk about Coda and Sublime Text. Both of them seem really nice and would probably suit me. However, I've found out about Edge tools and services from Adobe, more specifically Edge Code Editor, which seems very interesting. I've given the beta version brackets a go, and I love the interface and some features, and the fact that it'll probably work great with other tools I use from Adobe is cool. I would like to hear some professional designers and coders' thoughts on Adobe tools and services, especially Edge Code brackets. What are the pros and cons from a designy kind of intermediate coder's perspective, not hardcore ninja.javascript.node kind of guy? Perfect. I think we're getting it, right? That's good.
Wants to switch away from Dreamweaver, is interested in stuff like Coda and Sublime Text, but also possibly maybe what's up with online editors and stuff like Brackets. Brackets is a in-the-browser code editor.
Well, they have it. I think it's Brackets is made in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, so it could be in the cloud, but it's a downloadable. It's an executable.
So. Is it really?
Yeah.
They have an online version, don't they?
I think
maybe
so.
Maybe not.
I think so. But yeah, Brackets is like a node app basically that runs locally. It's pretty cool.
What do you use, Noah, first of all?
Yeah, Noah.
Sublime Text and if I was going to talk to this guy, I started in Dreamweaver. So no shame there, but get out of there. And I would promote a basic text editor and do your best to do without code hinting and any of that stuff. Just work with the shortcuts that maybe give you a new line or the tab complete or something. But my philosophy has always been, if I am in a pinch and a website goes down and I have to sit down on a Windows computer and the only thing they have there is Notepad, I want to be able to know by heart, in my mind, memory, how to code something and change it. I don't want to have to depend on the shortcuts that some of the more heavy IDEs give you. I want to be able to just sit down, Notepad, internet connection, make money. So I've been that guy who's been very sparse, just as far as like, I just, if I could keep it all in memory, I'm going to be sharper that way. And I want to go with as few shortcuts as possible. Shortcuts and code hinting. I love all the great helpful shortcuts that Sublime Text offers. But I do want to say on Brackets Run, I saw a demo, I think it was Brackets, where they were like, they had Photoshop open or a Photoshop file, and they would click on the logo and it would make like the, it would write the rule for it and crop the image. And it was incredible. It was, it would give you the dimensions. I mean, that would be hard to pass up, because that look, you know, for a front end guy, that's a ton of your time is back and forth between Photoshop and your editor. So if there's a way to merge those two, that would be a really tempting move for me.
Yeah.
In like a cool, smart way, not like, oh, make my, just do it for me. Yeah. Ruck and ruck.
I still want control. And that's what they give you. I still want control, but, yeah, that's kind of my take on editors. I like kind of the more sparse stuff. What do you guys use?
I use Sublime Text, but I'm actively watching Brackets. I think it's pretty cool. It's got some responsive tools that they're going to bake into it, and it's under active development. So it's like every 2 weeks there's a new version that kind of gets sent down. So
that's cool.
I like that, but it's a little slow. It's not because it's, you know, it's like a JavaScript code editor in a fake kind of browser window, but. So it's a little bit like, you know, the slowness just a bit, but it's
cool. So it's based on CodeMirror.
Right. Which you're using on CodePen, I assume?
Yeah, CodePen is also CodeMirror. And so is like the Safari Web Inspector, and so is the Chrome Web Inspector and stuff. Like CodeMirror is awesome. So a lot of like the what you makes it code editor like is CodeMirror. And then all the like nicety cool stuff is brackets, which is awesome. Like, oh, like you're in the HTML and you're on this particular tag. There's some command to like show me all the relevant CSS to this tag. And it like opens up a little like hole in the earth kind of thing that
yeah,
shows you the relevant selectors. I'm like, how cool is that? You know, like what a good idea, you know. So I like that how much innovation there is there. In the fact that it's built on HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is super cool. I'm of the opinion that in the next several years, in 5 years, let's say, we're all going to be coding in the web. The days of the desktop browser. It's cool how fast they are and super fast search and stuff. But as the powers of the web get better, having a web-based IDE is just going to be where it's at.
So check this out. In brackets.
Promise.
I'm working in an HTML document or PHP or whatever. I hit command. I like just put my cursor in like div class highlight or something. Hit command E and I see every CSS rule that's applied to command E from the CSS file.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yay.
It's kind of insane.
What do you see? It like a window that pops over?
It's like a little inline thing, kind of like on current iOS 6, like when you open a folder and there's like a little bleep. Like it's like
yeah, I try to describe it as a hole in the earth, but that wasn't a very good description. But yeah, like slides open deeper, and it's clearly like lower than that. But it's just a visual metaphor, you know.
This is cool. This is pretty neat. I don't know.
How do you try it? I'm on the thing. I clicked try it, and it's like download it.
Oh yeah, you have to download. So it's a download. I don't know if it runs in browser. But anyway, it's pretty cool. I think you should check it out. I don't know. The plugin setup isn't that great yet, but eventually I assume it'll get like CSS lint and JS hint and all that stuff. So,
oh, look, it's got the little deblet like pop. Like if you're over a color, it does the pop up, which shows you what color that is. Although mm-hmm. I'm not super sure how useful that is, but I like the ones where it's like, if you're over something that says like 20 pixels, it gives you a little slider and then you can just drag the slider wider to get the pixels that you want, you know, while showing you a preview. That's some stuff I would like to build in CodePen.
That's cool.
Cool.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for questions and stuff. Mr. Noah, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. How can people follow you, tweet you, give you money? How does that work?
Yeah, plug some
stuff. Could get me at Mother Futon on Twitter, hellobowl.com on the web for work. If you want to pay me money to make Golden Ratio responsive for you.
You're the best shop in town.
Yeah. Yeah. And Twitter's probably best. Thanks for having me. You guys, love your show. Love your work.
Appreciate it, man. And looking forward to that Mother Futon news.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be good. I hope.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thanks everyone for tuning in this week. And we got some exciting things coming up, Chris, right? We got a live show in person at Front End Conf.
Yeah, me and Dave are headed to Front End Conf in St. Pete.
So,
which this is, by the time you listen to this, it might be over.
It'll be over. But
you'll be able to listen to it very likely.
Hopefully.
Pending any recording errors or whatever.
So that should be fun. And thanks everyone for coming out in the chat room. You guys always give us interesting facts. And follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter and vote us up in iTunes. Subscribe, do all your things there. Social media, buddy. Chris?
ShopTalkShow.com.
Hurrah!
Oh, there it is. Command E. It works.
Pretty cool, huh?